Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Just Believe Radio. I am your host, Lisa Tarvis, and I want to welcome everyone to the show. I am a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, intuitive psychic counselor, and an author of the book Just Believe. Each Sunday, our show airs at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and we have a special guest each week, usually two. Today, we're going to have an abbreviated show because of the holiday weekend. We're going to do an hour show instead of a two-hour show, and we're just going to have one guest today, but she's a fascinating guest. Each week, the guests are experts in the fields of spirituality, holistic health, metaphysics, paranormal subjects, things of that sort. If you happen to be an expert in one of those fields or an author of a book about anything related to those topics, please feel free to send me an email, and I'll get you on the show as soon as I can. My email address is lisa@lisatarvis.com. So today, our guest is Marion Witte. And Marion, I'm going to read her bio to everyone. She's written three books so far. She has a fourth coming out. Her first book let me read her bio, and then I think it'll clarify everything and tell you exactly what it is that Marion has done and is continuing to do. Right now, she is focused on a really interesting topic about empowering women, and I'm very passionate about that subject as well. So we're going to spend some time talking about that. But Ms. Witte holds a bachelor's degree in business administration and accounting, and she has received several academic and professional awards, including graduating summa cum laude from college and completing her education in 3 years. Impressive, Marion. Upon passing the licensing exam while junior in college, she became the youngest CPA in the United States that year. While in Minneapolis, she worked for an international public accounting firm, and she served as president of the National Association of Accountants and the American Society of Women Accountants. She moved into general business management after leaving public accounting and served as the executive vice president for one of the largest tour operators in the upper Midwest. Upon moving to California, she became a partner in a jewelry manufacturing company and subsequently formed a computer consulting firm, a real estate development company, a CPA firm, and a publishing company. Wow. In 2012, Ms. Witte completed her memoir, Little Madhouse on the Prairie, which relays the story of her life. By shedding light on the cultural roots of her own abuse, she sets the stage for a way out of the cycle of violence against all children. Her memoir suggests ways one can heal from the wounds of their abuse, which if left untreated, can lead to self-destruction. By telling her story, she hopes to open readers' eyes to the serious and long-term damage caused by all forms of childhood abuse or childhood mistreatment. She believes that only through awareness, education, and healing can society prevent such future violence. She founded and manages the Angel Heart Foundation, a nonprofit organization devoted to parental assistance and empowering youth. She is also the editor-in-chief of the Foundation's sister websites, Next Generation Parenting and Brave New Leaders. Marion created the Wise Woman Collection, a series of books devoted to education, inspiration, and transformation. She has recently completed two books in that collection. Those books are Courage of the Soul and the No Regrets Bucket List, and is working on a third, Simple Treasures, a collection of her poetry and illustrations. Marion resides in Ventura, California, where she pursues her foundation, writing, and speaking activities. So, obviously, a huge underachiever here. I'm being completely sarcastic. Anyway, I want to welcome Marion Witte to the show. Marion, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Lisa. Thank you so much. It's a thrill to be here. I'm honored to be with you and your listeners.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your being on the show, and especially for the abbreviated show that we're doing today. It's going to, like I said, we're going to try and keep it to an hour today. So hopefully we can get through everything. And if not, we'll have you back on another time for sure. And I want to talk about a lot of things with you because, you know, like I said, you have definitely, I mean, I tease saying underachiever because your bio is pretty impressive. let's just go with that. You've done a lot. You've accomplished a whole lot. So, you know, already and you're still doing so much. So, but what I want to do, what I'd love to do if possible, is get to some of the things that got you started with writing. You started with Little Madhouse on the Prairie. And that is your memoir, and it tells a story of a not so fantastic childhood, and I wanted to touch on that because I think, you know, even though this book has been out for a while, and it's not necessarily where your writing career is going, but I think it does give a lot of history and explains why you started writing and why you're passionate about the things you're passionate about. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Little Madhouse on the Prairie and why you wrote it and what it's about.
Okay. First, I'd like to start out by saying it's interesting when you read my bio. It's always interesting to have your life kind of, you know, read in front of you. But then it's also interesting to look at that, and because sometimes people do all these things in order to prove that they are worthy. And so when I think about all these things that I did, and I did, I've done a lot. I've continued to just do. And part of that is because of my background, which I talk about in Little Madhouse. So sometimes having an extensive bio with lots of activities and projects that you've engaged in can be quite telltale. And I'm with all honesty saying that mine is very telltale. Doesn't mean that I haven't enjoyed doing these things, and I believe that, you know, I was supposed to do these things, but the quantity and the lifelong pursuit of so many things, I think, stems from, you know, my childhood. I grew up in the prairies of North Dakota in a very remote area, isolated from other farms and from our small town. And my family was of European descent, Norwegian and German, and we have a history, a cultural and genetic history in our family of abuse and alcoholism, and I grew up in that environment. And so it was during my whole childhood and my teenage years, I would write. When I was a child, I'd write poetry, and when I was, as I grew older, I'd write articles and for newspapers. And for me, it was a way of therapy. It was a way to talk about, to get my voice out there, because I didn't have a verbal voice to be able to speak up, but I could do it through writing. So I've always been at least predisposed to writing as my, you know, vehicle for expression. So when I became an adult, and after years of trying to recover from my childhood, and again, I relay all of these experiences in Little Madhouse, I spent 20 years on this path of trying to peel off the layers of this abuse and to understand what had happened and to just to work to every day try and, you know, become healthier. And so towards the end of that process, I decided that I was going to put my story out to the world in written format. And it took me a long time to be able to do that because I was concerned about telling my story. I was concerned about the pushback from it. But it wound up being, for me, a great therapeutic tool. And luckily and fortunately, and what I wanted to have it happen, is helped a lot of other people that have gone through similar circumstances. So it was my first attempt at, you know, professional commercial writing. And by doing that, then I realized it was the confirmation I think I needed that, yeah, I actually can write. And so then I started to, you know, work on my other books.
Yeah, I think that that's so important that, you know, that what you've been through, what you went through as a child, and you know, and like you were saying, the bottom line of everything that you've accomplished, so much of that comes from our history, and we can look back at our childhood and say, wow, it wasn't perfect. It was far from perfect, and in some cases it was terrifying and sad and horrible and, you know, all of those things, but that path does create the person who you become. And for you, publishing your memoir, I'm sure, was kind of, I would think, therapeutic, and it had to have been a way to kind of end that chapter of your life and maybe put it all in some sort of like box where you could file it away and say, okay, I'm moving forward now, you know, letting go of it and moving forward. And you still have the lessons, but you still have the history, but you don't necessarily want to live as that person anymore. You know, that you suffered as back then.
No, those are all very true statements. You know, I sometimes think I was the unluckiest child, and actually, as I reframe it and recast it and look back, I think I was probably one of the luckiest children, because without those experiences, I wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't be doing the work I'm doing today. So, but it takes time to be able to have that perspective, and it takes a lot of letting go. It takes a lot of accepting, and for me, took a huge amount of forgiveness. So the process and the culmination of finally, you know, writing the book was, and having the courage to write the book, it took a lot of courage, and it was it took me over 2 years, and it was a very dark time in my life, reliving all this and pulling it all back up. But at the end, it was like, I did it. I said it. I had my voice. And, it is. It doesn't necessarily, you don't close all chapters, but it certainly gives a framework in which to go ahead, because that was then, and all we have now is today and how we create tomorrow. So, yes, it was hugely important for me. And then, as I said, tangentially important, because there are, sadly, many, many people that grow up in these kinds of environments and situations that don't have a voice, haven't been able to speak up, haven't been willing to. And so sometimes if somebody else, like me, will tell their story, people don't feel so alone. And they feel, oh, yes, someone else went through something similar, or it doesn't even have to be the same, but some painful situation. They understood it, they accepted it, they worked through it, and they're continuing on. And it can be kind of a guiding light for others, and that's what fills my soul.
Right. And then out of that book, after that book, I guess, and because of your childhood, you created a foundation, the Angel Heart Foundation. Can you tell the listeners about the Angel Heart Foundation and what that's about and what you're accomplishing there?
I founded that in 2005, and my original goal with that was to have it be child advocacy and child protection services. And I was doing that for the first couple of years as I started to get it going. And then, there's lots of wonderful organizations devoted to that, so I felt I was somewhat replicating what others were doing. So instead of doing that directly, we would support other organizations involved there. And I shifted the focus of the foundation into two aspects, parental assistance and youth empowerment, because a lot of the advocacy groups are involved in, you know, protecting children or working with children in these situations. My advocacy is to prevent it. There's no cure for child abuse and child mistreatment. It has to be prevented. And I think that it's all about education and understanding. We do what we know what to do. And as Maya Angelou says, you know, when we know better, we do better. And so I think that for me, it's about educating parents, talking about tools, talking about this, these situations, and providing a resource. And then the second aspect is empowering our youth, because they are the future parents, and they're the ones that can change the dynamics of the planet. So we do our work through two websites, Next Generation Parenting and Brave New Leaders. And so we support and fund those. They're kind of, I call them portal, websites where people can go and get information and, check in and read things and find out different tools. So my focus of the foundation is now into prevention. So that's where we've moved in the last couple of years.
And that's exactly where you would want to be with something like that. I mean, all you can do is educate and help to hope that with the education comes some prevention. So that's great. And it sounds like a really, really fascinating foundation. Where can people learn more about that foundation and what you're doing?
It's angelheartfoundation.org. It's all one long, angel. heartfoundation.org, and you can go there, and that will take you to the sister websites, but you can go directly to nextgenerationparenting.org or bravenewleaders.org. So you can get to those two through the corporate foundation site, or you can go directly to them, nextgenerationparenting.org or bravenewleaders.org. And they are for parents and adults, and the other one is for youth.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So tell me, you started after you had completed that book, and I don't know, how long was it until you started the Wise Woman Collection?
That book I started in the fall of last fall. I started it in October. So it was about a year after I completed Little Madhouse.
Okay, so you've actually done everything pretty quickly. I mean, it's been even three books in a short amount of time, and are you finished your fourth, or are you still working on it?
I'm still working. I've got, some of my poetry and, I'm working on some of my illustrations. So that one is, I'm hoping to get it out this year or early next year.
Okay, so with the Wise Woman Collection, you started, the first book, was it Courage of the Soul?
Courage of the Soul. Yes, that, I had been thinking, I finished my first book and I was, doing promotion and I was speaking, and I don't know, I was just thinking about, as I was talking to people and I was getting feedback from people, I came to understand, as I told my story, what was the most fascinating thing was to hear other people tell their story back to me. And I came to understand how similar we all are, rather than how different we are, how similar we all are in our, we take on experiences and challenges, and they're different, they're unique for each of us, whatever it is we're supposed to encounter, but that we are all at our core. It's very courageous to be a human being here. It's very courageous to, take on this journey. And as I listened to other people's stories, it was humbling in a way, because I would listen to some stories and I would think, wow, mine isn't that bad, which seems bizarre as I think about my life, but it's all a matter of perspective, and it doesn't make any difference how dramatic or traumatic the experience is. If it affected you at some deep level, then it was, deeply significant and important. And I started to, as I was listening to people and they would tell their stories, something just kind of clicked in me about having ordinary people just talk about their life, a challenge that they've had, the process that they went through to deal with it, and how they, pursued overcoming it. So I started to think about where I was going to get this material, and I sat down and started to list out friends and associates I knew, and some of them I knew had, somewhat challenging experiences, some I didn't even know, and I put a call out to people, and I had I think about 20 people that responded that wanted to actually tell their story. And these are not celebrities, these are not famous people, these are ordinary people living their life like me every day. And so the stories started to come in, and it was very interesting to see what people go through. And most of these people went through this very quietly without other people knowing, or their very small support group. So I think it was also therapeutic for them to be able to tell their story and have it be in writing. There's a certain acknowledgement that, yes, I did overcome this. So what I'm doing with what I did with that book was just to kind of bring us all together. And in the book, there's, you know, several different categories, all, you know, life about relationships and health and your childhood and all sorts of different, everything that you can, you know, possibly encounter here, at least in a category. And there's usually a story that people can relate to either through their own experience or someone they know that's going through it. I like it because it's a common denominator, and it shows how we are, you know, we're all here. We all have some challenge, and when we think that our life is, you know, has more problems than somebody else, I just suggest you really have no idea what's going on in somebody else's heart and soul. And so for these people to have the courage to tell their story, I think it's very helpful for other people, because it has us sharing what are these very, very common experiences, human experiences.
Right. And I think you're right. I think that people telling their story, and, you know, there's something about seeing it in writing. There's something about it being acknowledged in writing, and you know, that kind of, I really feel like it gives everybody, it's just helpful. It's just therapeutic. It just helps people. I don't know if it's that they feel, you know, kind of like a validation, and, you know, it's just, it helps. It's very helpful. So basically with Courage of the Soul, you took a lot of different people's stories, some similar to yours, and put a collection of those stories into that book.
Yes, it's a variety of, you know, stories from, I think there's about 20 different people that wrote stories. Some wrote more than one, and it was, I just asked them to think about their life and something that they had gone through that they'd like to share, and if it would help others. And it was interesting, one of my friends that I've known since I was in kindergarten, I called her and said, would you like to put a story? And she said, you know, I'd do anything for you, Marian, but I've really had a blessed life. Nothing's really happened. And I just paused for a moment. I said, well, you know, Bev, how about when you got married and 18 months later you found out your husband had a brain tumor? And there was this pause. And she goes, oh, yeah. That's another thing that I discovered through that experience, was that people, we discount how courageous we are, you know, especially
right.
women, because we multitask, we take care of everybody and everything, and sometimes not ourselves so well, but we do. We are the caretakers of the world. And so when we take on these heroic, they really are heroic experiences and challenges, when we take them off, we just go, well, you know, that's the way it is. So I think it was, as you said, it was validation for people in a non-egotistical way, in a very helpful way, to just say, you know, this is what happened to me. And I always, when I write my first book and then this book, I've come to realize now, you put the work out, and what I think it's going to do probably is nowhere near what it's going to do. It kind of works its way to the people that are supposed to read it, and that's kind of a fun thing about, and that's been a fun thing about Courage of the Soul.
Well, and I think, too, when you're reading all those stories, and you know, you may feel like, you know, you with some people, like you're saying, a lot of, I think, women especially as well, do kind of think of their life, and it's just, well, it's just what I went through, and you know, you can always find somebody who has had a more horrific experience, you know, something maybe in your mind you couldn't have handled. And I think it's interesting that, you know, with a collection like that, you could, you know, if you've had bad experiences, whether it was childhood, you know, or whenever in your life, you know, it kind of gives you a little bit of, I don't know, maybe keeping your life in perspective. Maybe everything is not as horrible as you think, as you're perceiving it to be. You know, there are people that have gone through so much worse. So, you know, while you're having to remind people that they have been through some difficult things that somebody else could learn from. In the same respect, maybe it's also allowing people to feel a little bit more grateful for the life that they have, or the childhood they have. I know for me, I had a fantastic childhood. I had wonderful parents, and you know, there was no abuse, there were no issues at all. But you know, I became in my early 20s, and started screwing everything up in my life. You know, when it came to choices with men and, you know, relationships and things of that sort. So, you know, from that point on forward, I could write 1,000 books on what happened to me in 10 years time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much to it. So, I mean, we all go through different things at different phases in our life. And I think that you're right. You know, we power through it. You know, we power through it. We see what we have gone through, and we look at it. And I ended up being a single mom of two kids. I got divorced when I was 28, and I had two kids 10 and a half months apart. And when I got divorced, they were 3 and 4 years old. So, you know, I was a single mom working full time, traveling all over, you know, the country, doing different things at different companies. And I don't look, that was just my life. You know, it's just what I did. It's who I was. You know, I didn't think, oh my gosh, I'm so overburdened. You know what I mean? It's just, you just power through it, and you do so much. But I think by writing it down and by having it, in a form that other people can read, it does empower them, and that's what I love about this series that you're doing, starting with Courage of the Soul, because I think there's just so much that we can learn from each other, and so many ways that our stories of what we have gone through may be a slightly different, but we're all connected in a way that you know, there are some similarities in what we all go through.
Definitely.
So, Courage of the Soul was...
Go ahead.
I
think also that, you know, we do power through, and it's what we do. It's what we chose on some level. We chose these experiences, so we do go through them, and we do power through them. You know, what I'm trying to add to that element is that, and then we need to acknowledge, hey, I did that, you know, well, it turned out well, and just give ourselves that big, you know, pat on the back, because as women, we're not really taught to do that either. It's society, you know, we're not taught to, it's egotistical, it's conceited to do that. Well, I don't believe that. I think that we have the right and the obligation to honor ourselves and our journey and what we've done, and to take, you know, pride in what we've done. And so that's what part of this book is too. It's about saying it's okay to speak up, to say what you've done for whatever reason, and whether it's for you or someone else, you know, it's okay to do that. I think when I started to think about the telling of these stories, to me, you know, the indigenous people of the planet, the different societies that have been around a long time, storytelling was a way that the women would sit and teach the youngsters. You know, the elders and the sages would tell stories. And that's how the young women learned, was through that. And we've lost that in our society. We don't, we're not being the elders and the sages. And I'd like to have us kind of reconnect, and for mothers and grandmothers and extended families to tell their stories about their life. I think it's a great, great way for us to teach and to pass on our wisdom and knowledge.
Yeah, you're right, because we don't have, I mean, we don't have the luxury, I guess, of, I mean, even phone conversations, I think, with girlfriends have stopped. We're so busy now, we just pick up the phone and send a quick text, you know, or something like that. We don't even spend the time. I was just yesterday, I talked to a friend from high school You know, she was my best friend in high school, and I hadn't talked to her probably in 6 months, and I spent like an hour and a half on the phone with her, and that's because of her. She's not a texter. She calls and she wants to talk, and I was like, I got up on, I felt so good, you know, because it was just like, wow, I actually had a real adult conversation with a friend from school and caught up, you know, in that hour and a half. And it just felt like the old days, how we always communicated. And you know, so I think it went from, you know, things have just changed so much from sitting in a circle and telling stories, like you were saying, to over the years, you know, then you'd get with a group of friends and you spend time, you know, having coffee together or something after you got the kids off to school, and then it was on the phone, and now we don't even do that. I mean, we really don't. So the sharing of the stories is so critically important, and I think that we miss out on so much because we're just doing everything, you know, as fast as possible, you know, trying to get as much done as we can, as fast as we can.
Yeah, I think technology is great, but I think that we have, you know, and it's easy, I get caught up in it myself, it's easy just to send a text saying, hey, how you doing? I don't know why, it's instead of picking up the phone and going, hey, how are you really doing? Because you don't get that in a text. You don't really find out how someone is doing. You only find that out when you, because it's all the things. It's the inflection in the voice. There's lots of things, information that comes through in that verbal communication. And so there's no doubt we are in some type of communication transition here. And how it's going to shake out is will be interesting. I think that if you look at a small child, they would rather sit and have grandma or grandpa tell them a story than to sit and watch a television program. You know, their children understand all of this perfectly. They would rather go outside and in the playground with other kids than sit and, you know, play a video game. And then as we get older, we just get further removed from that. So, but that's another whole topic, isn't it?
Well, it really is, and it's I think it's an important one, and it's this bandwagon I've been on lately where I'm like, okay, this is crazy. I mean, we've gotten to the point where we're just, you know, everything is basically down to, I mean, we don't even type the whole word. I'm noticing I have three teenagers, and I got to tell you, my oldest can barely spell. Like, he's a boy, and I think boys are bad spellers, just many of them by nature. But, you know, I said, I'm like, you realize you just completely destroyed that word. And it's because they abbreviate everything. You know, if you don't type Y-O-U, you type just a U when you're texting, you know, and it's just like, I don't know, just, you're right, that is a whole nother story, and it's a story for another day, but it's my new thing, where I'm just like, I love technology, I'm a technology girl, but my God, we're just getting so lazy in our communication. But, okay, so after you wrote that, when you started the series, the second book in the Wise Woman collection was the No Regrets Bucket List, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that book. Now, I know the movie, the Bucket List. That was an awesome movie with Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson. I thought that was a fantastic movie. Is that what it's kind of about? The same sort of premise?
Well, the Bucket List movie, and it's wonderful. The actors are incredible. That's about two folks that have terminal illnesses. So they meet in the hospital, and then they decide to go out and do everything that they said they were going to do in life before they kick the bucket, hence the name. So that concept is, I picked up the term based on that movie, but the concept of a no regrets bucket list is not things that you want to do or acquire. My concept is, who do you want to be? Who do you want to be during your lifetime? Who do you want to be remembered as? So it's living a life with no regrets, so that I say that big bus that's coming, and it's coming for each of us someday. We just don't know when it is. But when that big bus takes us away, have we become the type of person that we want to be? Have we grown into our own skin? Have we evolved? Have we completed our purpose and our mission here? So the idea behind this kind of bucket list is not things to do before you die, but things to do during your lifetime. So that you just become the spirit that you are, that is embodied in this, you know, physical vehicle here. What was your purpose here? What was your destiny? What are you passionate about? And so deciding early on in life what that is, and then living your life towards that. So it's a lifelong bucket list. And if I can just tell you how it came about, I had just finished Courage of the Soul, and I had not really thought about the next book. And Courage of the Soul just came out, and I wound up with a life-threatening illness. I wound up in the hospital in isolation for a week, and then I was in home health care for 6 weeks. So that was, you know, just I missed the big bus there by, you know, by the grace of God, I guess. And so while I was in recovery, I started to think about my life, and I started to think about, as you read my bio, I'm thinking about all those things I've done. And you know what? That's not what I want to be remembered for. It's interesting, and it's wonderful. I don't negate any of that because it's great experiences, but none of that tells you who I want to be. So I started to think about, when I'm gone, and I would lay there and think, is this it? Is this the way it's going to happen? It seemed kind of odd to me, and maybe a little bit too early. But I started to think about that, and I started to think, have I done the things that I really want to do so that I am remembered as the kind of person I want to be? And it was, for me, actually it was a resounding no. There were things that I kept saying, well, I'll take care of this, I'll do this, I'll be better at this. And I realized, you know, you don't know if you're going to have the time to do that or be better at that or take on this challenge. So I started to go through this personal inventory of my life and thought about different things. And this book was kind of just channeled out of that. Then I started to think about a lot of different things, and I started to put down my thoughts. And I thought, well, maybe since I've gone through this process, this might be an interesting idea for other people to think about. And so that's how, and I completed it in about 6 weeks. So it was one of those that just kind of, it came out of this experience, and I almost felt a sense of urgency to get it out. So it was, that's how the No Regrets Bucket List came into the world.
So what do you, like in that book, I mean, it had to have been, were you learning, I don't know how to really phrase this properly, but were you learning about, while you're writing it, were you learning your own lessons while writing it? Or you know what I'm saying? Like you're writing this book, and you had to have been doing a lot of self-examination while you're writing a book like this. You know, when you're talking about what kind of legacy you want to leave behind and what you want people to remember about you and things like that, is it a book that teaches other people, I'm assuming it is, teaches other people about what they want, you know, are there tools in it that they can use to help create, you know, a more meaningful life? Or and did you, while you were writing it, I guess, learn what you wanted to do with your life going forward?
Yeah, I learned. It started as me just doing an inventory, as I said, on my life and going through, okay, am I interested in doing this? have I done this? Is this important to me or not? You know, forgiveness is a huge thing for me. So, you know, one of the chapters I have is forgiving somebody that you thought you could never forgive.
Right.
And I put that in there because it's a lifelong journey for me to do that. So that's, I want to be known as somebody at the end of my life that forgave people.
Right.
Then, you know, there's about appreciating, you know, every day, every moment, you know, staying present in the moment. And that's a huge thing for me. I can not do that a lot. So I started to go through what are the things that I really want to take on for myself that I haven't done, and so started to list those out. And then as I thought about putting a book together, I put in lots of other things that other people may want to think about doing, you know, doing something, getting out of your comfort zone, doing something that just scares the crap out of you, just thinking about it and then going out and doing it. So, and that's not necessarily something that is on my list because I tend to do that a lot to get myself out of myself, but it's something that someone else may want to entertain doing to become maybe less fearful. So my concept in the book was to take a look at your own life and say, okay, I want to be known as a courageous person. I want to be known as a kind person. I want to be known as a, you know, philanthropist. Whatever it is that you want, the legacy you want to leave, then I give various different ideas in there of ways to accomplish that. So it's kind of a pick and choose, you know, yeah, I'd like to do this. I don't do that, or that doesn't intrigue me. So it's very much very small subsets of tools that people can, if they choose, take on to, you know, practice during their lifetime to become the kind of person that they want to be. So it's a very personal, developing your own bucket list and developing who you want to be is very personal. And so these are not, you know, tried and true ideas. I cast out a variety of thoughts for people to read and see if it resonates with them. And if it resonates and you go, yeah, I think I'd like to, you know, try that, then you add it to your list and start to accomplish it.
Who are you accomplishing it for? I guess you're doing it for yourself. You're obviously, you know, when you're doing something like this, when you're trying to think about the legacy you want to leave behind, but who do you want to leave that legacy for? Who are you actually focused on when you're doing something like this, when you're doing this self-examination? Who are the people do you think that we're most focused on caring about? What kind of legacy? Is it the general public? You know, is it our children? You know, who are we trying to leave that legacy for? Do you think?
Well, for me, and again, I think that's probably an individual decision, but for me, I can answer it. First of all, it's for me. I want to, when I leave here, I want to have become the kind of person that I really believe I had the opportunity and the ability to become. So it's for me. So when I'm looking back, I'm like, yeah, I did a pretty good job at what I went there for. But also because I think that we have familial and almost DNA encoding in our families. I think that we are here to not only become the best person we can be and heal, we're here to heal generations going forward, and I think we're healing generations behind us. I know that may sound odd, but I believe that. So I think that for me, becoming the kind of person that I feel really good about, I think it heals my family. I know it heals my daughter. I think it's had a healing effect on my, you know, tribal family. And I think that is generational. By healing people, then they become better able to become the kind of people they are, and it goes forward. So, and I know that sounds rather expansive, but I believe it to be true. So I think first and foremost, I create my legacy for me, but I also believe that it has lasting effect.
Yeah, I would
I would think it would, because it's got to be something where, you know, after we're all gone, we're not here anymore, you know, on this planet. We have to think about what people are going to remember us as, and you know, and that's that's a kind of important important piece of living, you know, is what we're going to be remembered for. And you know, we tend to, I think when people pass away anyway, we tend to put them up on a pedestal and forget that they were human and they did some really crappy things as well as some really awesome things, you know, and you know, we forget about that, and that's probably for the best. But you know, to be able to focus on you know, to be able to think about, I mean, that's huge. I never thought, I know when I wrote my book, I've only written one book so far, but when I wrote my book, I remember seeing it, when it was done and printed and I got my copies in the mail and everything, and looking at it and thinking, wow, this will be around forever. And this is my story. This is my story of, you know, what my abilities were from the time I was a child, and how those abilities basically made me believe what I believe in my life. And that was very intense. I mean, it's an intense thing to do when you sit there and you think, all right, this stays forever. This is like, I have a Library of Congress number or whatever the heck that thing is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's something that you feel good about. But you know what? That's not what I'm really focused. I mean, that was a great feeling, and it was like, and it does, it gives you this little bit of, completion. Like you feel, okay, I've done that. I've accomplished that. That's there now. My story will always be there. But it's the people that you're around, I think, you know, like you're saying, the people that, the people from your past and the people that you may never know, your grandchildren, your grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren. I mean, you know, it goes on and on. And they'll be able to talk about, you know, who you were as a person, not necessarily that you wrote a book, but if they want to learn more, hey, there it is. It's in writing. So that's
I think that before I lose my train of thought, so I'm in sync with you. I think that you know, all we're going to be after we're gone here is memories. I mean, you know, nobody is going to remember how many houses we had or car, what kind of car we drove. Really, nobody's going to care. But they're going to remember what kind of a person we were and what kind of impact we had. So I think about, and, you know, the closest person in my life is my daughter. So I think about, you know, when I'm gone, I want her to think about, if she's in a situation, what would my mom have done? And I want her to think about that, because she, you know, had some respect for how I handle it.
Right.
And then she can have that as an option in her tool bag. So I want to be that kind of memory in not only her life, but I would like to be that people that I touch, you know. And we touch people we don't even know with things like books, but I think the most dramatic impact we can have is on those people that are in our immediate sphere of influence, and we become a positive force. And so when we are that memory, then we are still really alive here. When people are thinking about us and what we would have done or how we handled that, then we really are, in some way, we're still here, you know, working, you know, with the people that are left behind. So this is
we're
suggesting.
Influencing. We still have an influence on them, and you know, they've learned something. I mean, to have your kids after you're gone, and I do this, you know, my mom's been gone 5 years, and I still think, wow, what you were saying. What would my mom have done in this situation? You know, how would she have handled this? And that's the legacy she left behind, because I care, you know, about what she would have done. I take that into consideration. I'm not saying that I always follow it and do what she would have done, but I certainly consider it, you know. So it's exactly true what you're saying.
And then, you know, the reverse is true. You don't want to be necessarily the kind of person where people don't even think about what you would have done because they had no
right.
respect for the kind of life. So, you know, sometimes your legacy can just be being the most kind and compassionate person. People think, you know, legacies have to have your, you know, name on a building or, you know, some foundation. I suggest that's wonderful if that's what you want to do. I'm suggesting that you can have more impact, more direct, long-lasting, sustaining impact by just becoming the kind of person that you want to be and then having that impact. And it does impact generations, because as you think about your mom and what would she have done, you know, you're also becoming an example for your children, and they will hopefully think that about you. That's how we live forever, indeed.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really good thing, and I, you know, to think about your legacy being. You know, it's hugely important for such a, you know, for such a huge amount of people. But like you said when we first started talking about this, you're really doing it for yourself. You're doing it so, you know, it's for you. You know, you want to do it for yourself. So that's really important. And I really like that whole concept. So we're going to wrap up here in the next few minutes. What I want to get into is, you know, we've talked about the Little Madhouse on the Prairie, your first book, Courage of the Soul, which was your second, and then the No Regrets Bucket List, which was your last book. But now let's talk about the one that's coming up. You're writing a fourth, and it's going to be the third in the Wise Woman collection, correct?
Correct, yes. It's a working title right now is the working title is Simple Treasures. And what I want to do, I love folklore stories. They're simple and they have some, you know, meaning. A lot of them are animal based. So I'm trying to pull together a collection of folklore stories that I enjoy, and then also I've written poetry my whole life, so I've got quite a collection of that, and then I also, you know, do artistic work, so it's going to be the lightest of the, you know, three books, but it's so it'll be simple things that you can pick up and read a little story, and it'll have some profound message in it, but written in a very simplistic way. I like the old-fashioned poetry that still rhymes because there's something familial about it, and I love, as a child, I mean, who doesn't like Dr. Seuss, really? And so I like that kind of poetry. I love Dr. Seuss. I love Shel Silverstein because they tell stories. They're really, you know, morality stories that they're telling, but they're very light and they're fun. And so that's the kind of work that I want to come out with, too. It still has the idea of teaching, and it still has the idea of story, but in a very light fashion. So this is, I want to move a little bit out of the little more serious work into something more fun for myself. It's actually, truthfully, it's on my bucket list. I want to lighten up. I want to lighten up a bit, and so I thought, well, that'll be a good way.
Have you decided how many books are going to be in the series already, or are you just going to just keep going, you know, with the series until you feel like you've kind of, you know, touched on everything that you want to touch on?
Yeah, the first one came out, Courage of the Soul, it wasn't going to be, you know, a collection. It just kind of came out, and then I thought, well, you know what, this is kind of a cool, you know, approach, so I put collection on it, and then, you know, 6 weeks later, No Regrets Bucket List came into my, you know, head,
right.
So I think it's, at this point in time, if something really appeals to me, and it's kind of like, oh, you need to write this, I'll do it, so, you know, maybe it'll be the three, maybe it'll be, half a dozen. I don't know. I don't have. It has to really speak to me. It has to be something that really touches me. So that's. I kind of let it go, and sometimes something comes into my head, and I go, oh, let's tackle that. So in answer to your question, I don't have plans for a certain number.
All right. Yeah, I'm always amazed by people that do that, and I think that's easier to do with fiction, not necessarily with this sort of work. You know, to be able to say, okay, I'm going to write the series, and it's going to be, you know, or I'm going to put a collection together, and it's going to be, you know, six books or whatever. And I don't. I mean, I guess for fiction that would be something that would be easier to do, but I think for this sort of thing, not so much. I think that's got to be, you know, a difficult thing to do. And like you said, it has to speak to you. If it doesn't speak to you, it's probably not going to speak to everyone else, you know? So
absolutely. Yeah. I don't want to just write a book to write a book. I mean, if I never write another book, then that's the way it was supposed to be. So I just, if I think it's important or helpful or that people would enjoy it. Yeah. I think the current, you know, vogue thing is with, you know, fiction is you have to write at least three to have your series and everything. So, and that's fine. Maybe that works for fiction where you have a continuing story. But these nonfiction, they're little, they're not really contiguous. They don't necessarily, they have a theme, but they certainly, you could read one without ever seeing or knowing there was another one. So that's the kind of, I enjoy that a little bit more.
Yeah, I do too. And I think especially for this kind of theme, you know, where, like, you know, like, yeah, it's great when it's a series. And, you know, I know even for, I like to read supernatural fiction, you know, things that are just a little bit, you know, maybe about somebody with psychic gifts. And, you know, and I love the idea of a series, and because you just want to keep learning what's going on in that person's life. But I think with this sort of thing, you know, I have like three books in my head right now that I want to write, and one of them, I would love to write a fiction, and I would love to write a supernatural fiction, but the, you know, the time it takes, you know, I mean, you're really churning these out fast, and I think that it must be, for you, it must just be, you have so much to say, you know, and you already, and you're either very, very disciplined in how you write, which I give you a lot of credit for if that's the case, because I am so not disciplined. But you have so much, probably it has to already, do you feel like it's already there? You know, like it's just sitting there waiting to be expressed?
Absolutely. First of all, I am the most undisciplined writer ever. People say, what takes a good writer? And I said, I don't really know. I know that you're supposed to keep your butt in the chair, and I have the attention span of a gnat, so I am horrible. So the latter is true. For me, it's like it's there, it's already, it's kind of been percolating maybe for years up there, and I just sit down and I do it. So I'm not the kind of writer where I sit down every day and, you know, write something, and I know that that makes you a wonderful, prolific writer. For me, I think it's been just like compiling up there, and then I sit down and I do it, because I like to get things done. I don't like to you know, have them hanging around. So I don't even hold myself out to be a writer per se. All I can tell you is I put down thoughts that come into my head and can put them into words and shape them and format them. And that's how, if there's another book after Simple Treasures, that's what it'll be. It'll be just something that's like, okay, let's sit down and write this.
Yeah, something more that you need to say, something, you know, something more that you want people to learn from. So I think you're doing fantastic work, and I really appreciate your taking the time to be on the show today, and tell everybody where they can find all three of your books, soon to be four books, Little Madhouse on the Prairie, Courage of the Soul, and The No Regrets Bucket List.
Yeah, you can find them all on the publishing site. It's wisewomancollection.com, wisewomancollection.com. And so that has information about all the books there. And then they're available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Okay, great. And so everyone can, anybody that wants to get in contact with Marion can do so at her website, which is www.marionwitte.com. That's MarionWitte.com. And I'm assuming, Marion, that there are links to all of these other sites and your foundation sites and all of that from your MarionWitte.com site?
Yes, you can get to the publishing sites, you can get to the foundation sites, so you can do that all through my blog.
Okay, that's fantastic, and so everybody can keep up with what you're doing, and hopefully we'll be seeing your fourth book out here soon, and you know, I think there's so much that everyone can learn from. Some of the other things that you're doing, we talked about being editor-in-chief, nextgenerationparenting.org and bravenewleaders.org. And, of course, there's the Angel Heart Foundation, which is an organization devoted to parenting support and youth empowerment. So I think that's, you know, everybody go visit Marion's site and the... Definitely check out the wisewomancollection.com. I love it. It's very powerful, and there's some great messages in these books. So again, I really appreciate your being on the show, and we will definitely get you back on, especially when the next book comes out, so we can talk about the rest of that and how you end up getting another one out there.
Okay, I would love to. It's been a delight. I'm here about sharing information, and because knowledge is power, and when we know more, we can be better and do better. So everything I'm doing with the books and with the foundation is just about giving people tools so that they can to help. That's what everything. It all sounds a little bit different. It all has a little different bent to it. But at the end of the day, it's just about sharing stories and sharing information.
Absolutely, and I think that's what we're all trying to do. You know, with a lot of the stuff that we're putting out there, for people to read is just telling our stories and hoping that people learn a little bit something from it. So. Really very great job, and really great talking to you today, and again, I really appreciate your being on the show.
Thank you, Lisa. It was wonderful.
All right, I will talk to you soon. We'll be in touch soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marion. All right, everyone, we have definitely had an abbreviated show today. I don't know where you guys are listening, but it's hotter than blazes over here on the East Coast. It's humid and it's not pleasant. So if you're listening outside, I suggest you go inside or turn your air conditioning up, because I'm going to try and make it snow in my house today. Anyway, so this was a great show. Every week, Just Believe Radio airs at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Every week there are really great subjects, really a fantastic guests and amazing subjects in lots of different realms of holistic health and healing and metaphysics and spirituality. So anyway, you can visit me on my website at www.lisatarvis.com. You'll find links to my Facebook pages, Twitter account, LinkedIn account, and all the other social media sites out there. You'll also find links to where you can find my book, Just Believe. And until next week, everybody have a safe and happy weekend, or what's left of it, and a super, super fantastic week coming up. And I will talk to everyone again next Sunday at 1 o'clock. Thank you all for listening, and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.